Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Chicken salad from Chicken You Know What. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of August 23rd and 24th. Okay, Aaron came and went, messed things up big time. We know that things are going to get back on track. Oh, my God. It's not the end of the world. Hey, man, the largemouth are biting, and some of these small ponds and little rivers, little little micro chatterbaits, little four-inch Senkos, except when it was pouring rain, the wind, whatever, get to these secluded waters. Fresh waters that you just want to fish. The bite was on. So we had some 2 days great fishing going on. Hey, man, we're really jammed up. September 1st, Canada goose season opens. So we have Austin Daminger, Fish and Wildlife's Migratory Game Bird Project Leader, coming up. We're going to talk to September Canada Goose Prospectus. Also going to touch on some rail birds. Yeah, remember the little clapper rails on the meadows and the marshes? Then we have Ron Jones, ACP Outdoor Products, coming on to talk about Canada goose hunting tactics in September. Also have a kick-ass Canada goose recipe coming up. That's all jamming up line. Grab that cup, grab the rebel. Before we go, shout out, you attain nirvana when you visit Salon Belladonna. Okay, this little place I was at, my hair looks like a mess. Went in there, whoa! How good is it? I never had so many women mistake me for Blake Shelton after I left that place the other day. It was amazing. That was like the pipe. That was amazing. Just shout out to that place. Okay, man, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. All right, Canada season is on the way. Saltwater fishing will pick up. Give it a couple more days. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of August 23rd and 24th already. Boy, the time is flying. Hey, you're tuned in 7 to 8 a.m., 97.3 ESPN FM, 50,000 mega far-reaching watts of the Rack and Fin Radio message. Also streaming live in that slot, 97.3ESPN.com. You can download the 97.3 ESPN app or go to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or other platforms to get the Rack and Fin Radio message via the podcast, which is usually posted Saturday afternoons or sometime Sunday for the following week, man. Get the message out. It's going to be an early Happy New Year. I know that when the season opens and Rack and Fin Radio reopens in our parallel universe, need cause for a New Year celebration. Going to get the lowdown on the opening of the September special Canada goose season with none other than Austin Daminger, biologist with New Jersey DEP's Fish and Wildlife, and Austin is also the Migratory Game Bird Project Leader. Not only are we going to talk Canada's, we are going to touch on one of my faves in the Meadows. Shout out to George Loder at the Meadows, the marshes, little clapper rails. Austin Daminger, how you doing, man?
Good, Tom. Good. How are you?
A lot cocked and ready to rock. One day closer to hunting season, Austin. I'm loving my
coming
fishing.
Quick.
I'm loving my fishing. But listen, Austin, let's talk the resident Canada goose season. It's been around for several decades now. Resident goose population, is it fairly steady? 100,000 birds, 80,000 birds, fluctuations? What's the deal here, little brother?
So as of 2024, we were about 55,000, a little over 55,000 birds, which is about 28% less than our long-term average, which is about 77,000 birds. Still plenty of birds in the area, in the state, and in all the other states that have resident seasons.
Right.
But that's the point of the resident season. We're trying to reduce that population. So, so there's still plenty of birds in the area.
North, central, south, there are plenty of birds. Problem is access. Some of these, a lot of these birds hang around, gated neighborhood communities. You have retention bases, whatever. It's tough to find places. We do have a lot of public land. You have to search it out where you get the green on the blue. You got the woods, the fields, whatever, and water. Water is critical. Now, here's the dealio. The season's going to go to the 30th. It's a 15 bird bag limit. Don't make you go crazy because it's a 15 bird bag limit these birds aren't that easy. You can use electronic calls. And here's a magical thing also, when they change this to, it used to be sunset. Now you can hunt half hour before sunrise to half hour after sunset. That half hour period, Daminger, is the magic time, is it not?
Oh yeah. We've got a lot of positive feedback from the hunters once that was implemented, and just that little half hour, there's birds going back to roost And just catching that last half hour of flight has really made a game changer for most hunters that hunt the Canada, early September view season. And yeah, just like you said, I think access is one of the biggest things. A lot of these resident birds, they're in parks, they're in golf courses, they're in neighborhoods, a lot of spots where you can't hunt, but if you watch them long enough and the local farmer cuts one of his fields early, they'll fly there to feed. So it's just finding which fields they're using. There's not that many that are cut this time of year.
Right.
So but if you can find them and get permission, that's a really good way. And just like you said, if you can find the water, and especially water near cut fields or wherever they're feeding, then that's even better.
And listen, if you don't mind the traveling, here's the dealio. What we found over the years is that you find some of these wildlife managers, a great WAMA system here in the Garden State. Again, this situation is kind of it's picky. It's pretty precise what you have. Again, the green, the blue, whatever. For example, we'll make runs up to the Black River Wildlife Management Area up there in Morris County, bordering Chester and Irony and stuff. Birds everywhere. Again, but you have that Black River system going through. They have lots of little ponds and stuff like that. And you could have some hot gunning. Again, it's very short period. First thing in the morning and again towards evening. But there are areas around it. I'll tell you, Austin, to me, Google Earth has opened up eyes to a lot of areas where if you make the effort to go, especially for September geese, you're going to find opportunities on public lands.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Google Earth, and if you're looking for public land, New Jersey Fish and Wildlife actually has a mapping feature, the Wildlife Management Area Explorer map. It's very similar to our Hunt Explorer that you can look at different zones and stuff like that. But it shows you all the WMAs across the state, so you can kind of look in your area or wherever you want to travel. But, don't leave any stone unturned. I've heard a lot of different tactics for September geese.
Oh, yeah.
I learned a river or a creek.
Yeah, also, I learned, especially down here, all my years out here in the Southern Tier counties, I'm loving it, man. These hunters are very, very innovative. There's no such thing as thinking within the box, because these guys are absolutely amazing. Hey, right there, right near we are, the Stafford Forge WAMA. I mean, you got the fields and the residential areas around there. Those birds are trading back and forth all the time. It's right off the parkway there. You have parts of Port Republic right there. And then down in the Cape, Austin, where you are, plenty of opportunities. And then to mention out west, out by Swedesboro and stuff. Thing is, too, if you want to knock on doors, Austin, I found it weird, as much damage as, not like the snows, don't get me wrong here, but as much damage as the geese can do and stuff, getting opportunities to hunt, knocking on doors, is still not that easy.
No, it's not, especially September, because like I previously mentioned, very few and far between fields are cut, and your diehard September goose hunters seem to have already locked down some of those fields that either, whether they're leasing them or they've held permission there for a couple of years, just because they know they get cut early. Don't get discouraged door knocking though. I mean, all it takes is one person to say yes, and then you can have the best hunt of your life or have a field for the rest of your life.
Austin, so the resident goose population stuff is healthy, correct? Remember that it was an avian flu or something was going around. Is that pretty? I don't know if it was flu or whatever, but has that pretty much run its course?
So avian influenza is kind of always it's out on the landscape quite frequently. It depends on the severity of it. So USDA APHIS, they actively swab for avian influenza in ducks and geese during the summertime. So right now we're in our New Jersey Fish and Wildlife and our preseason duck banding. So we're targeting mallards, wood ducks, and trying to disband as many as possible. And then USDA APHIS will come along with us and they'll swab birds. They have their target sample is almost 100 for the summer, and then they do more sampling during the fall towards the tail end. So they're constantly monitoring it. But, yeah, there is a pretty significant avian influenza outbreak over the wintertime where it kind of hit a lot of bird species.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But it really seemed like snow geese got it the worst. And we did have some hot spots for Canada geese, but nothing – nothing crazy. Like, we didn't have any hundreds of bird die-offs or thousands of birds die-offs. So if anybody was watching the news or anything, PA had a pretty significant die-off of snow geese, and so did Delaware. But we only had, like, one. The largest case for us was, like, close to 50 birds.
Hey, Damager, Jersey birds, even Margaret's, are tough, man. Come on, we're Jersey.
You gotta be.
You're speaking with Austin Damager, biologist with New Jersey DEP's Fish and Wildlife. He's also the Migratory Game Bird Project Leader. Austin, before we jump to the railway, is this a major change for the regular Canada goose season? The bag limit in the north and south zone has been reduced to one bird during the regular season. So if you're going to be hunting or up north or south, that's a onesie. That's a onesie. So I don't know what happened there, Austin, but I'm leaving that to go. Also, another September 1st gem of mine. Shout out to the great late George, if you're looking down, man, yeah, I'm still a pain in the ass. George Loder, who got me as an adult into hunting clapper rails. Not the soars up there, the clapper rails on the Meadows, a.k.a. Meadows of South Jersey. When I was a youngster, Austin, I'm talking before your grandparents were born. September 1st was a big thing, especially among the hunting clan. Everyone would flood down to the marshes, pun intended, and walk the marshes for the birds. They would have their, you know, Labradors or Chesapeakes or even, you know, some mutts, whatever, put up these birds. And as a kid, I was invited a couple of times to go along after they kept pulling my fat little ass out of the mud. But and then I enjoyed it as an adult also, and that is a lot of fun. And let me tell you something, pheasant, quail, grouse, they get up, they level off, and they fly. You try to hit a rail bird, I don't care how good you are. Those other birds, these things will knock you crazy because there's no consistency to their flight. Also, not much is said about clapper rails or promoted. I don't even know how many people do it anymore, if any, because we would hunt right there at Cape May Wetlands, right there behind Ocean City all the way down through Stone Harbor. Plenty of birds. Sometimes we were the only ones out there. Has activity on the rail birds? Have you noticed any upswing of popularity, or do you think anyone even bothers anymore?
So we have about approximately 300 railbird hunters in New Jersey. How diehard they are, I guess that's going to vary across the state. But I think a lot has to do with, just in general, the hunter numbers are low and on a downward trend. So obviously rails are going to follow that. But it's definitely like an old school style of hunting, but everybody you talk to that does it, they say it's one of their favorite things to do.
It's so much fun. It's just so
it's a mix of waterfowl and upland bird hunting. Yeah. So your diehard upland game bird people, they love it. And then your diehard waterfowl hunters, they love it. So it's a good mix to kind of get some crossover with some people like that. And or you kind of break up that hunting lull from we can't hunt from January, February, and then September comes around. If you don't goose hunt, it's a good way to kind of sharpen your skills and get out in the marsh. But I'm sure a bunch of rail hunters are a little upset right now that the hurricane didn't come about 8 days later.
It's all predicated on tide. Awesome. This is what me and Lodi used to do. And his son, Georgia III, or was it Georgia IV? I don't even know. We get it in this old, an old Chincoteague or whatever, this old skiff. We'd go down the meadows, the creeks, as he said, motor up naturally on a dropping tide, and we're catching white perch. But we had the guns in a rack, and then you hear the sound they make, and all of a sudden, there's one that would run down and grab a fiddler and run back in. The dog would launch itself. It was a diesel or I forget which lab it was. Out of go, and then we'd get out, and the bird go, Austin, we call that the cast and blast. It was so much fun. And listen, this is what's so surprising. Oh, they probably taste like bleep. No, this is what amazes me. Damager, something that picks out its victuals, its meals from that benthic goo. Listen, you get the breasts in a pan, little oil, little butter, little garlic, little seasoning in there, tastes like roast beef. Austin, always amazing because the ducks and geese sure don't do that. But these rail birds are yummy in the tummy, man.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of hunters. So I've never myself had rail birds, but from what every hunter I talk to, they love it.
Yeah, it's good. So,
and yeah, just like you said, kind of go out, bring a fishing rod. I know we just discussed early goose hunting. Some people do that, bring a fishing rod for early goose. You get that lull and flight in the morning and just cast a little if you're on a river a pond or a lake, just kill some time. But other methods for rail birds is just like we We had already talked about people go out at a high tide, usually a storm surge or a full moon tide or a mix of both, and bring a kayak or a sneak box or some lightweight boat that floats in a little bit of water, and you just walk the high marsh, and that's usually where the railbirds are concentrated. And honestly, I've heard the best method is just wear a pair of old sneakers and
that's it. Yeah.
And a bathing suit. And don't be afraid to get wet.
And maybe get a little cut up with those grasses. The funniest part was, thank God there was no social media back then, when Georgia the Third and Georgia the Fourth had to pull my 300 pounds out of a... Don't step in that hole, Tom P. Walk around it. Why? I just went through something like that. Don't step in it. Oh, right up to my crotch in that muck. And meanwhile, the dog's pushing up birds. They don't know whether... leave him be. We'll go get him later. All right. They finally dragged me out. Listen, the limit on Rails Dale out of Clappers is 10. The Soars in Virginia, that's a whole different thing. Hey, Damager, let me ask you. Have you ever seen a snipe?
Yes, I have.
Where are they? Don't they look like are they like a marsh woodcock? What the hell's a snipe?
Yeah, they're, I mean, snipe and rail birds are pretty secluded animals. They don't really like to be seen. Snipe are a little bit, I would say, still show themselves a lot more. I think people tend to see rail birds more because they hear them and they go looking for them versus snipes.
Clappers are pretty vocal. Hey, anyone out there doing a snipe hunt, call the station here. We'll line it up. Lunch is on me. Austin, I have to get going. Thanks to us. So we can expect a banner September season. Especially, Austin, later in the month, those last 2 weeks when the fields start to get cut and stuff, it's a great time. Listeners, get out there and enjoy it. Limit is 15 on the Canada's electronic hole size. Unplugged shotguns, no more than 7. And I'll tell you, it's just a great time. It could be a little hot, a little sweaty. Bring back those 90-degree days. I miss every nasty degree of it. Austin, you take care. Thanks for joining us. Have a great, safe season. Hope to see you down there in the Cape sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on, Tom.
See you, brother. One of the young guns, pun intended. Be right back. Rack and Fin
Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Yeah, we're back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of August 23rd and 24th coming up pretty soon. The September 1st opening of the Canada Goose season, as we discussed a little earlier. Here it is. You'll think they're easy targets. You're going to have some young birds. Yeah, they'll be kind of like, hey, what's going on? Oh, there's Cousin Ernie and Eddie over there. Let's go visit them. It can be extremely challenging. Joining us on the line right now, very, very special guest, longtime friend, acquaintance, and overall cool guy, Rack and Fin Radio. Going back 22 years when we started, it's Ronnie Jones, owner and president, Rednecks Pride Outdoors, manufactures the ultimate deer scents, deer lures, bear stuff, and calls. People don't realize he is one incredible call maker. He and his son Jennings and that whole crew. Talking Canada geese. Early September chatter. The matter of the chatter. Jonesy, how you doing, man?
Hey, Tommy. How you making out, buddy?
I'm thinking September honkers. I'm thinking September goose jerky. I'm thinking September goose breast flattened out. Cream cheese, jalapeno rolled up, barbecue sauce on the grill, Jonesy. But first, I have to hit him. First, I have to get him to come in, and that's why I put the call in to you, Jonesy. Get it? Get a play on words call. Let's hear something. Let's hear a honker greeting, baby. Go.
There you go, buddy. He just, that's out of the mouth.
He just said, come on over and play. I have a little present for you. As in a load of number two black cloud. Okay, Ronnie, September goose hunting, you always think, I always say, when it first started back in the 90s, and we did well. But again, the listeners, development took its toll on the habitat areas we were able to hunt. It's where the grass fields and sod fields are now condos in the area. So that's neither here nor there. Ronnie, first thing, patterning the birds, locating the habitat, the flight patterns, the times, that magical half hour after sunset, like I said earlier, when they added that to the regs, made a big difference. Let's get going, man. September goose, and where are we looking first?
Well, the first thing when we're talking about habitat, you just mentioned it. You know, it's a curse to the hunter, okay, because we're complaining because we lost property to hunt, our ground to hunt. But it was a blessing to the geese because all that you just mentioned is why the resident geese are thriving. They don't need that, you know, wild natural habitat that we all dream of hunting in. It's what next to those condos, next to those housing developments, in those housing, what's every condo and housing development have?
Grass.
Water basins.
And what about retention basins and grass? There you go.
That's it. And you know, every park. So and those geese don't have to go far. They step out of the water, eat their grass, and go back into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to go. And that's one another reason why the resident geese are hard to hunt. It's not that they're hard to hunt. They're hard to get to where they're at.
I was just
going
to say, hard to get to. That's exactly, you read my mind exactly,
yeah.
Jonesy. Yep, hard to get. Now, there are some decent whammies, wildlife management areas around areas in state parks and forests that are open to hunting. Water, no geese. No green, no geese. The two are interlocked.
Exactly. And they don't have to move very, very far. You know, you get along the Delaware River, Rancocas River, or, you know, creek and all that. You have those what we call natural setting birds, and they can be, you can get to them, and they do tend to fly a little bit more, if you will. And I'm seeing, and in the last 2 weeks, I'm seeing, you know, flocks of 15, 20 birds.
Yeah, Ronnie, let me interrupt just a second. Friday morning, coming down the parkway, I cut across. I'm zipping down, going over the Mullica, and. One flock just went over the Bass River. I'm heading south. Another flock, small, 10-12 birds, going over the Mullica itself. They're both heading, east towards the salt marshes out there, the Meadows. So they are flying.
Oh, they're flying, and there's a lot of birds around. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And the huntable birds, the ones that we're going to be able to set up on, you know, the first, that first week of the first. You're going to mainly see those smaller, what we call the smaller flocks, you know, anywhere from 7 to 10 birds up to 20 mm-hmm. birds. That would be a bigger flock. Now, I was by Cooper River up there in Collinswood area yesterday.
Yep.
And right there at that park, there was probably 200 birds, yep. 300 birds.
That's at Camden County, correct?
You're right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
And what those birds will do is they'll I mean, it's a big river system there,
yep.
You know, Cooper River, but they'll fly there. Or they'll fly over Camden into the Delaware River, which is what, a couple mile.
Yep.
But then they're just transition, but they don't have to go far. So that's what makes it so rough for us. So here pretty soon, if not started, I saw a couple fields. We're going to see the sweet corn fields being cut down, and that's
right, yeah. That's, towards the end of the month. That last 2 week period in the what I call September transition month. That's prime time, critical time. But it's all predicated on the harvest.
Yeah, and that's going to be your hot spots, because that's where the resident birds, you know, they've been eating the green grass, and they like the green grass, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But as soon as they start to get into those, you know, as soon as they start cutting those sweet corn fields, if you have them around, that's the birds are going to go there, because it's just like you and me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can only eat steak so many times a week before you kind of want chicken or something else, right?
I was going to say Oreos, man.
I've sat in a restaurant with you, my friend.
remember that guy came over and said, are you on death row or something? I never saw somebody eat like that. My lovely Deemery just rolled her eyes and turned and started to talk to someone else. Hey, man, that sausage and biscuits, I never had a plate like that. That was my first introduction to South Jersey sausage and biscuits, people. I had it in my hair. Oh, my God.
It was kind of embarrassing. But anyway, it's that's what we're looking for. And if you, you know, that change of crop, given the geese another opportunity, some of our best hunting that we've ever had was where you had birds, you know, roosting or holing up on a park or a college some place, and you have the closest sweet corn field or some crop change. That's our better hunting. But again, what makes it great was they're coming in small flocks, you know, the 10 birds, the 15 birds, sometimes a family unit of five or six.
Not as many eyes looking at you, people. Yeah, you say, great. Oh, you have a great flock. Look at it. 100 birds coming. That's 200 eyes can spot any kind of movement in your hose.
Yeah, yeah. And they're more, you know, they're not. Our a lot of people will say that the resident bird isn't as social. He is social. It's just they're at the end of their summer season, if you will. And what are they used to? Being around smaller flocks. And when you look at it, and when people. And I tell people all the time, listen, you know, when you do your scouting now, you're going to see that you may have 50 birds in the field, but if you really pay attention to what's going on, you're going to see 5, 6, 7, 10 in a little bit of a group right here,
right,
and 20 feet over, another small group, and then 15, 20 feet over, another small group. So even though there's 50 birds or 100 birds in that field, they're still in their micro groups, if you will. And that's something to pay attention to because they're still socially oriented to the family group or the rearing group, you know, whatever they was used to in the fields or in the lakes or ponds.
Joining us online is Ron Jones, owner, president, Rednecks Pride Outdoors. Topic is September goose season coming on. A couple of weeks, 30 days long, the month of September, 15-bird daily limit, electronic calls allowed. We're going to get into the calls right now. Don't have an electronic calls. Some guys use them, some don't. I just can't see spending the money, so I don't. But I wish I had the money to do it, but I don't, so I won't. But, Ron, calling now. We were watching me and the lovely Dean, we were watching. This is a little farther north, and I guess we're in Monmouth County. They're not honking chatter, but just goose noises in between two or three different, they're not honking, and that chatter, and I'm watching some move here, some move there. Goose vernacular at this time of year, what's it all about? Getting them close, getting them flying, getting their attention, Ron. What kind of calls are we doing?
Don't go hard on them. Now, hard meaning volume, okay? Don't go with, blowing their ears out, and that's why... You know, guys that knew me from 30 years ago, 20 years ago, they know I hate acrylic calls. I have one, okay, and I make them. But the reason I don't like acrylic calls is they're so stinking hard and loud.
Uh-huh.
All right. And the normal goose hunter, especially in September, you're just going to go too hard on them. All right. Now, I talk a lot into my call, but I'm doing a lot of the murmurs. I'm doing a lot of... Okay, that's you're doing them soft clucks. You're doing that soft sounds. If you are on the X, you're where they want to be. They're coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all you got to do is hide, and I call because I love calling. But if for a September goose, if you're on the X where they want to be, listen, I've killed geese. Me and my son, we've killed geese with 3 or 4 decoys out.
That's it. Yeah, right. I've seen it. Yeah.
If you're on the X, if you're not on the X, and the problem is a lot of guys in September try to hunt geese like they would in December,
right.
Which are traffic birds. Okay, it's birds that are migrators, and it's a whole different bird. It's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different world for the geese at that point. In September, they've got tons of food. They got tons of places to go. If they're even going.
Right.
All right, most of them are walking out of the water and eating the grass, and they're walking back into the water. And that's what I tell guys all the time. Look, find yourself blue on green, all right, where they want to be. And then set your decoys up. Now, everybody likes to put out 200-300 decoys, and that's fine. Not me.
Okay. Me either, man. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean, some of our best hunts that we had in September was, 24, 36 decoys. All right. And again, I'm a redneck. Full bodies look nice, but I don't like the pocketbook that empties out, right? You know, a lot of times where you use silhouettes. Matter of fact, years ago, back in the 1970s when we was doing it, we hunted junkyard rig. Okay, that's what we hunted. We hunted plywood silhouettes and junkyard rig. And what's a junkyard rig? Everybody who back in that days, it was cut tires.
Okay. Yeah, I remember those. Yeah.
You know, and we did, and our blind was a burlap.
Yep.
Thrown over top of us. That still works. We just don't look cool doing it.
Yeah. Tyrone, one thing too, people that say, oh, the September birds are easy to hunt, or they're stupid, whatever. No goose is stupid. I mean, you're going to get in every gene pool. Okay, yeah, don't get me wrong, but Ron, they can make you want to pull your hair out, man.
They're only stupid for the first time.
they get whoa. We were a few years ago. Were these birds already hunted? And the guy says, "Those are my first time." Ron, I take the blame for that. I'm moving around, but Ron, he says, "Yeah, they're not." That's why I want to dispel that myth that it's, you know, a goose in the oven, September, easy peasy. It's not. It's really not there.
No, and here's what makes it even harder. And this is where people don't think about this. Your resident goose is used to people.
Yep.
Okay. Proof in the pudding there is go to a park and see how close you can walk up to geese without walking up to them. In other words, if you are walking down the sidewalk where everybody's walking, or you're walking across the grass where everybody's been walking and playing, you can get 10, 15, 20 yards from them, okay? And they're just watching you and eating and what have you. Now, you walk directly to them, or you stop and stare at them, all of a sudden you're going to see their behavior change.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right? And so what I'm saying is they're conditioned to human behavior. All right? So when you're in that field and you're hiding and stuff like that, and they see you hiding, well, that's throwing a certain whatever you want to call it into the geese. Now, again, like I said, they're only stupid the first time.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming in. You got a flock of 10 birds, and you're like you and me, and we can't hit the broadside of a barn. All right.
He's being kind, but he said that for my bad. He's being kind. You're killing me, Jones. You're killing me.
Yeah. You miss them, or you drop out two or three out of that flock. Okay. Yeah. It's all that. You just taught those birds something. All right. Now, I'm not against, you know, I hear guys talking, you only shoot small flocks, never shoot at a big flock. Bologna, shoot at whatever flock that comes in.
Right.
Because they're going to get, you know, you can't educate the bird. No, you educated the birds.
Yep.
As soon as they hear a bang and a bird drops out of the sky or something whizzes past them, you just educated that bird.
Okay, Ron, you're right on there on the education process. Ron, we're up against a hard break. We're speaking with Ronnie Jones. He's owner, president of Rednecks Pride Outdoors. We're talking to September goose season coming up. 30 days. It's going to be some tough hunting, but great hunting, great opportunities there. It is hunting season. But Ronnie, the two most important calls in the September situation, green on blue. What do you got?
Well, if they're out there flying and you want to get their attention, you're going to do your long honk. That typical thing, but don't go hard on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as soon as they commit or condition, you know, as soon as they tip to you and here they come, you just go into your murmurs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But don't go nuts. When you see that they're committed, shut it up. All right. Resident geese are not real loud vocal. There's a lot of flock noises.
Right.
Okay. That low murmurs, those little things, but nothing loud. Everybody wants to go loud. Just let your decoys, 2, 3, 4, 25, 500 decoys, whatever you're using, let your decoys do the job, and just do the low flock murmurs and what have you when they're coming in.
Well, Ronnie Jones, thanks so much for your expertise on this. On a serious note, but people, this guy is amazing. He and his son Jennings, their products. Ron, up against a break real fast. Give that Facebook page and our website. People can view your products. You still have those goose flutes?
Yeah, well, we make a hybrid. It's like a hybrid. It's called baby flute.
Instead of as long as
the flute is, because we use a short reed gut in it.
He was playing this thing, him and Jenny, he's like the Pied Piper of Hamel, you know, with the rats, with the food. They are just coming in. Ron, that was something. Shoot. I'm there. Look at him. Okay, Ron, one more time with that site, please.
RedneckSpride.com.
Hey, safe travels on your way up to Maine. I understand you're going to be involved in a TV show with bear trapping with your bear stuff. Good God, Jones.
Looking like it, yep. Yep, it's looking like we're going to be up in Maine. Doing some bear stuff up there.
We'll get your stuff back here for deer and bear season. We'll see you soon.
All right, buddy.
Take care. Just an amazing guy. Just an amazing, amazing guy. Amazing product. September goose season, man. It is there. And the best part, the honey, the best part's in the eating. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Saturday morning in the locker room with Billy Schwein, producer Nick Earnshaw, and former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Dave Klemic joined me in the studio. We will react to the Birds' last preseason game against the Jets. Longtime NFL strength and conditioning coach Jeff Hurd will check in to talk about his time coaching in the NFL. The Red Hot Phillies welcome the Washington Nationals to the bank, and we'll react to Friday night's game. All that and more, it's the locker room with Billy Schwein, Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon on 97.3 ESPN.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go, the gap below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of August 23rd and 24th. Okay, we're talking Canada Geese. That was Ronnie Jones before that. Austin Damager with Fish and Wildlife. Goose Perspectives. We also touch on rubbers. Join us right now. The pace de resistance is Scott Patterson. He is a New Jersey State Chairman of Ducks Unlimited and a chef extraordinaire. And he has a great, great September goose recipe for us. So after you pick up your tongues off the table after you hear this, you're going to run out and get your state stamp. You're going to get your federal stamp. And you're going to get your HIP number. And you are going to go. Mr. Chairman, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tom?
Oh, it's September's coming up. Goose season's coming up. Patterson, I am fit to be untied.
Just around the corner.
Hey, Patterson, let me tell you. Your meals, Your parties, your preparations are legend. They are legend around the state, around the trice. In fact, I think all over the universe. Scott, you have a recipe for barbecue pulled goose. Fits in perfectly with the September season because it is still barbecue season. Scott Patterson, go!
I do. So basically, you know, geese get a kind of bad rap. But what I do is, so obviously, as soon as you harvest them, as soon as you can, get them clean, get the breasts, you know, somewhere cool. When you get home, wash them thoroughly. And soak them overnight, you know, in cold tap water. I normally change it at least twice. Next morning, when you're getting ready to prep the slow cooker, 6 to 8 hours, you're going to want to put them in there. 6 to 8 hours, cut up your favorite onion, whether it's red onion, white onion. To me, it really doesn't matter. Cook some bacon pre, get it all nice and crispy, chop that up, throw that in with the onion and whatever spice to taste you like. I don't know if you want a little bit of hot and kick. I don't like the kick, but I'll take it like the salt and the pepper and the oregano, stuff like that.
Yeah.
6 to 8 hours, slow cook it. It falls apart like roast beef when it's done. Okay, cool it down. Obviously, you got to look for your shot because you don't want someone to come in there and put it on a cracker and get a shot in their mouth. So look for the shot if you can find it. And then, yeah, when it's done, all pulled apart, get your favorite barbecue sauce, drench it in the barbecue sauce overnight, you know, let it sit again. And then when you're ready to reheat, you know, just get some more barbecue sauce, heat it up, freshen it up, put it on your crackers, put it on your Melba toast, put it on your sourdough, however you want it, and just rock and roll with an ice cold beer.
Dude, man, let me tell you something. My upper lip is sweating. I can't believe you said Melba toast. I thought I was the only last person in the universe that ate those. My personal Melba toast is shad roe with some sour cream and crumbled bacon on Melba toast. It doesn't get any better than that, except maybe this goose recipe. Scott, how long did it take you to perfect this? How many seasons are you just experimenting? I know, your expertise is known, but how long did you come up with this?
Well, I got to be fair. It was given to me about 20 years ago, and I just kind of tweaked it over the years. The bacon I added, that was my own. And again, I've kind of danced around different spices and stuff like that. Until you can't stop eating it, then you got it right.
Scott, listen, well, is this apropos for mallards, black ducks and stuff as well, sea ducks?
Yeah, you can do it with anything. You know, maybe some of the palatable ducks I would do otherwise. But some of the ones that maybe you know you didn't want to harvest but you did, you know, you got to eat it if you shoot it.
Sure, absolutely.
That barbecued pulled duck, if you want to kind of change it to that name, that will work as well.
Scott, any particular barbecue sauce because you see the Sweet Baby Ray's, and you go to these shows and you see the custom ones. Sweet Baby Ray's?
You just named it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but again, any barbecue sauce works. You know, you want a little more spicy kick, go for it, you know. But any barbecue sauce works. Don't be afraid. You know, overcook. You can't overcook it. So once it starts falling apart, you're ready to rock and roll.
Hey, Patterson, before I came down, I got my stuff laid out. I have a pyramid of Kent Fast Steel all lined up, ready to go. My 10's ready. My lovely Dee Marie with her 1100 Remington Sporter. That thing's a cannon. Hey, she used to have a TV show. I don't know how many years ago. The two guides looked at each other. She nailed a goose. They estimated it 60, 65 yards up. And when that thing hit the ground, ba-boom. So it is that time. Well, Scott, we have a couple of minutes. Let's talk New Jersey Ducks Unlimited, little brother. What do we got?
Yeah, so we've had a really, really good couple years. You know, obviously COVID hurt grassroots fundraising. But last year we were up, about $120,000. And that's nice. Because all the volunteers and all the people that get out there and enjoy the resources, they're coming to the events. And that's what we need more of. We're going to try to get a couple chapters back up and running. Barnegat at Bay, we're going to try to get re-up and re-running. And that's really the key to our success. We got to put our efforts grassroots, get the money flowing, get the conservation work done, and attract more young hunters. I mean, that's going to be the key to everybody's survival. And we partner with a lot of good organizations.
Yep.
Folks have realized that, Ducks Unlimited is more than just about guys, gals going out and hunt. You know, we're here to protect the resource and do whatever it is that we have to do. And it's really starting to pay dividends.
Scott, it was great to, and you hear me, people, you know me, I created copper wire. I stretch a penny so far. But Scott, getting that state stamp up to $10 was a sea change. That was great. I mean, the benefits of that little extra $5, people, what it can do.
Yep. Yep, for sure. And that's been a big part of it too. And we're supporting our waterfowl habitat north of the border where all our black ducks, a lot of our puddle ducks are breeding. Yep. So we got to work with our partners. But again, we need the people to come out, support the events, and contribute where and when they can.
Scott Patterson, thanks for joining us in Rackfin's short segment. You will be on, Patterson. I have you inked. You don't know this yet, but I have you inked in for several dates in October, November. Best of the family, Scott. Take care. Doing a great job. I appreciate you coming on. You be good.
Appreciate your support. Take care, Tom.
See you, brother. What a recipe on that one, man. Go, that was fast. We're jamming. Go to the podcast. We still have probably half a dozen frozen goose breasts vacuum sealed, man. Can't wait. Be right back to wrap it up.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
And that'll do it for this week on a Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. September Canada Goose Man coming up, Rambar cut up. But hey. A women's shooting event by Fish and Wildlife's R3 program is going to be held in early September. Join us online right now. Very short notice, very short shot. The amazing, amazing Tiffany Woolery. This girl is a firebrand ready to go. She is the program specialist for the R3 hunting and shooting program. She's also the coordinator. Tiffany, sorry about that. We're on a tight jam. Great to have you on Rack and Fin. Tell us about this super event. Go, girl.
Good morning, Tom. Yeah, this program is going to be on September 7th. It's going to be from 10 a.m. to 2, and registration is going to close on Thursday, September 4th at 5 p.m. It's open to women 18 years and older who have completed hunter education and have their own 12 or 20-gauge shotgun. It's going to be 6 shooting stations. They're going to shoot a real shooting glaze course. There's going to be things from teal, which are going to go all the way up in the air to 50 feet they're going to shoot at, a station in the woods that they're going to shoot at, then there's going to be clays coming towards them and away from them. It's going to be a great day on the range with top instructors out there at Fin, Fur, and Feather Sportsman's Club of New Jersey.
That's over there. That's in, that's like by Cream Ridge Freehill. That's on the Monmouth-Burlington border, isn't it? Well, 539 up in there. I know the area well. Hey, listen, Woolery, just calm it down with those rabbits. I see these rabbits. I don't know where rabbits, and I used to live in Texas, man. Those black-tailed, I haven't seen a rabbit that fast ever, man. So
it's insane. These women, what they can shoot at, it's so impressive. You definitely don't want to see me out there. I can't keep up with them.
My lovely Dee Marie says, you sort of suck at sporting clays and trapping. I said, babe, unless I could eat it. I'm getting excited about shooting. But I'll tell you, this is a great event, and it's limited to how many people, Tiffany?
It's open to 8 women.
8 women, okay. So registration ends what? Closes?
Thursday, September 4th.
Okay.
And they can register by going online to our New Jersey Fish and Wildlife website and our R3 page. We have our own website page, and they can click on the registration link from there.
Great. Okay, women's intro to sporting clays, fish and wildlife. Tiffany Woolery, thanks for joining us. Hope to get you on with a little more time sometime in the future. And she is a biologist, fish and wildlife. Jersey Fish and Wildlife rules, man. We got the best. You take care, Tiffany. See you soon.
You too. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Take it. Wow, that'll do for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. And remember, you attain nirvana at Salon Belladonna. See you next week. Tom P., Rack and Fin Radio.